All right, so we're shifting gears a little bit from pharmacy settings to transportation, but still in the healthcare realm. And I'm going to talk to you today about an evaluation of transportation utilization during a transition to managed care, which occurred here in Illinois, and related to older adults and disabled adults on Medicaid. This was a team effort at the University of Illinois at Chicago, where we had our evaluation, and Dr. Tamar Heller was the PI on this grant. I have no relationships to disclose. So a little bit of background about transportation. Why is it important? We're talking about healthcare. Why are we talking about transportation? Well, studies have shown that it is related to healthcare and certain healthcare outcomes. It's been highlighted as a social determinant of health in the past couple of years, and you can see that in some of the different funding announcements that come out nowadays, where transportation, housing, these other social factors are included as determinants of health. It's been cited as a barrier to keeping regular appointments among low-income people, persons with disabilities, older adults, and children. And it's shown to be related, missed and delayed care from lack of transportation is associated with higher emergency room use and more hospitalization. So studies have shown this relationship with transportation and healthcare. The non-emergency medical transportation system is a system unto itself that gets funded through the Department of Health and Human Services in this country. And it provides non-emergency rides for medically necessary treatment. There's been lots of battles among states and patients as far as the implementation of that, but federal courts have ruled that it is a necessary benefit that people on Medicaid are obligated to have. As with other Medicaid system, other parts of the Medicaid system, the NEMT systems are overburdened and under constant funding strains. And there's within states, there's lots of pushback in terms of providing rides to people, and lots of different ways that states use to kind of limit how much people can use this system. We thought it was an important area to look at as part of our evaluation that I'll tell you about as well. So give you a little context on Illinois and this integrated care program, pilot program that occurred. It was a move from traditional fee-for-service to Medicaid managed care that was run by two managed care organizations in this area. It involved 40,000 consumers in the collar counties of Chicago, and involved Medicaid-only seniors and adults with disabilities. It started in May 2011. It began in the suburbs around Chicago. I don't have a map, but if you're familiar with Chicago, there's lots of, it just spreads out like fingers and kind of across the highways and transportation systems. But we looked at, it began in the suburbs of Cook County and then several other counties around that county. And then finally expanded to Chicago at the end of FY14. But because of this delay, it allowed us to have a comparison group between the suburbs and Chicago, where Chicago was still using the fee-for-service system, where the state is paying for services instead of the managed care organization. This program was projected to save $200 million over 5 years and to improve the health and quality of life outcomes, including prevention, rebalancing of long-term services and supports, and coordination of care. So as far as the transportation piece of this, I just wanted to go over some of the similarities and differences that occurred as part of this pilot program compared to, the regular service under the fee-for-service. Part of the similarities was that contractors still had to comply with federal regulations that, as I talked about earlier, were part of other court cases and part of what's regulated by the central management services federally. Part of the changes was that there was more coordination of these services. So you had care coordinators who helped manage the care of patients, right, that are between their doctors and the transportation and other providers, helping to coordinate their transportation. They did some different features to make the scheduling of trips easier. And they did allow for pharmacy stops after visits. So that's one connection to our pharmacy topic, which was interesting. It was something I was going to try to analyze separately to see how, you know, potentially these pharmacy stops helped predict pharmacy adherence. But the way the data was, it didn't really allow us to do that. Another difference was that MCOs paid a capitation rate to a transportation broker. So a transportation broker is an entity that gets paid to run the prior approval service, so approving all the trips and then managing the different transportation providers who provide these services. And so in this case, they paid a capitation rate instead of the state directly paying the transportation providers. And you could think that, you know, potentially this could cause the transportation broker to want to provide less rides, because then they more money would stay with them, and that's why, you know, it's important to kind of see how the outcomes were affected. So the research questions that we looked at here was, did managed care improve transportation services? And within that, we wanted to look at whether individuals in this ICP pilot program received transportation when it was needed. And I'll get into how we define that aspect in a second. And then we also want to look at how does that vary among different subgroups, so kind of do some subgroup analysis. And then we also wanted to look at costs, so how did managed care reduce the cost of providing transportation overall as a whole? This pilot program was supposed to reduce costs for the state, and so we wanted to look for this area, did it reduce costs? The study design we used was a difference in difference with propensity score matching, where we looked at the period before the program and then the period after the program. And we looked at it with two groups, the intervention group being the group in the suburbs where the ICP started in the fiscal year 2011, and then the comparison group being the fee-for-service group, kind of going along the same trend in Chicago. The sample we used were individuals on Medicaid who were eligible in FY13, fiscal year 13, and fiscal year 11. So we did leave a little bit of a lag there in fiscal year 12 because during the transition there was so much going on that the data, you know, wouldn't really be a good representative data set. The data we used was fee-for-service and MCO claims data. And the dependent variables that we used, the first one is the days where non-emergency medical transportation were used per member month. So this gets at just kind of general transportation utilization. We have the transportation cost per member month, so this is our cost variable. And then the last one is the days that were used, the days where transportation were used over the days of outpatient visits. And to explain this, the first two, I think, get at more of the, you know, how, more of the system's point of view. How well did the system change? The last one, I think, we tried to get at a little bit of the patient perspective in terms of thinking, okay, I have 10 outpatient visits in this year. How many of those did I get transportation to? And so that gets at that ratio of the number of transportation visits provided. The independent variable was being in the ICP or not. And then the propensity score matching method that we use kind of helps us to balance the two groups. So within that method, we used the demographics, the waiver category. So under Medicaid, there's different waivers where different people get different type of long-term services and supports depending on their need. So we use that as one of the matching components. The expenditure history, how much money was spent on that person during the baseline period, their utilization history, and their clinical classification codes or diagnoses. And what this does is creates a weight to balance the two groups at baseline. And you could think that, you know, people who live in Chicago, people who live in the suburbs are going to be very different. And that's why this method was really important to be able to utilize this comparison group. And then we did some subgroup analysis with these four groups who I chose because the literature has shown that these groups use the non-emergency medical transportation more often and are also in need of this transportation services because they can't drive or they lack existing transportation. So the first two groups are people who are on these waivers that I mentioned, the Medicaid waivers for physical disability and elderly. And the other two are ones that I use these clinical classification system codes, people who have conditions related to dialysis. People on dialysis have a lot of times get transported to centers to conduct the dialysis. And then the ending mental health, some studies have shown that people who are getting behavioral health treatment also get these transportation services a lot. So I wanted to see how this transition affected their transportation use, because these are the most important consumers. Okay, so the results. What I show here in this table is selected baseline covariates for the suburban and Chicago samples. So the first column is the percentages for people in the suburban group. And then the second column is the raw Chicago group. So this is before the propensity score matching. And you could really see some of the differences. There's a larger African American population in Chicago. There's less money spent on the group in Chicago, and some other differences as well. And so when we did the propensity score matching, that's the third column, that's the matched Chicago group, and you can see how that helped to make the groups more balanced in terms of race, expenditures, age, male or female, and then the types of services that they had used. So now into the utilization results, what we saw in the first line there is I looked at the proportion of members who used the NEMT, and we can see what we have. The first column is the ICP group, and then we have the pre and post, and then the Chicago comparison group pre and post. And so we're looking at that difference in difference relationship, and we see there was a pretty strong treatment effect, 24% increase in terms of the proportion of people using NEMT. And then the second outcome there is the number of days using NEMT. So wanted to look at the volume of transportation provided, and that also increased by 0.2. The next was that third variable that I looked at, the ratio of outpatient visits where transportation was provided. And we do see here as well that looking between the groups, there was a treatment effect of 4.6% for all the members. And then among the subgroups, we see there was increase as well for all the subgroups. Some of them have a larger increase than others. The group of physical disabilities has a larger increase than the total members. The elderly have an increase, but it's slightly smaller. Patients that have kidney-related conditions have a higher increase as well from the main group. And any mental health has an increase, but slightly smaller than the main group as well, than the group overall. You can see some of the numbers there as far as the N's. I think that the any mental health group is a pretty broad category, and it's something that I'll talk about, but as part of future directions, I think I need to kind of limit that a little more and work with a psychologist or behavioral specialist to understand which conditions really have those behavioral health treatments that would require the transportation. Looking at the cost did increase as well for all the members. There was a $10 increase across all the members. And then we see that in terms of these subgroups, that they have a much higher increase as well, so $28 for people with physical disabilities, $22 for the elderly, $61 for any kidney-related conditions, and $11 for any mental health conditions. This was pretty striking to us because part of the goal of the managed care was to reduce cost. We did try to dig into it a little bit, and for the paper, we're going to try to do that a little more as by having some more interviews with the managed care organizations. Part of the reason we looked at that may have to do with the cost is different types of vehicles that get used. So as you dig into the transportation, the broker decides on what type of vehicle that patient would get transported in. And part of what we saw was that during the ICP period, these MCOs used more taxis, actually. And taxis, you could think, are obviously very expensive. Partly they did this, though, because the broker didn't have as wide of a network of providers available. And so, you know, they explained at one point to us that they, you know, it's kind of a last minute decision to, you know, be able to get a person a taxi. Ideally, you'd want them to set up a regular car service, which would obviously cost a lot less money. Another factor being potentially distance to providers. So as the network of the managed care organizations was built, they may have had to travel larger distances up front. And so that's why it's kind of important to kind of track this over the next coming years to see if that changes as the managed care network increases. One of the other interesting findings that we saw was just looking at transportation usage among those who are provided transportation. So looking at anyone who had at least one transportation trip, what we saw was that the mean number of transportation trips provided was fairly low. It was around 31% across this whole period. You know, and this kind of shows the differences among the groups. And I wasn't really looking for an effect here, but more just kind of looking at the, you know, what is the prevalence of use for transportation, and 31% is fairly low if you think of the number of outpatient visits where people have to find all kinds of other transportation. They have to have their family take them or pay for taxis themselves. So to wrap this up, NEMT utilization was higher during the ICP period. The MCOs appear to be spending more on transportation, but also providing a higher level of service. And we see that consumers are using other forms of transportation to go to basically a majority of their outpatient visits, which I think it hasn't really been talked about in the literature that I've gone through so far. Some of the limitations, the data that we used, it didn't get into the single trip, so we broke it down by whether any kind of transportation was provided during that day, so we didn't necessarily capture like round trips, which would be nice to be able to do. The waiver groups are missing some people, so they're not certain. The physical disability group is not everybody with physical disabilities. It's people who are on this particular waiver, but it does kind of define people who are in the most need who have a physical disability. And the last limitation is we didn't have data on the costs of running NEMT, so some of the literature has also shown that just the cost of providing the service and coordinating it is part of the big expense of it. And we're going to try to work on getting some of those costs to see how you know, that shift to the managed care organizations running it versus the state, how those factor in. Future directions, we'll look at computing a monthly analysis. So we have kind of more of a time series look at things. Some of the future questions that we want to ask are, does having transportation when you need it lead to better health? So kind of look at some of those other outcomes like emergency room use, hospitalization, see how transportation is related to that. And then also look at what kind of burden transportation is on families and relatives who have to, in this case what we saw, probably provide most of the transportation because, you know, from, you know, kind of the qualitative work we've done, that this service is I mean, this is a whole other presentation, but the unreliability of this service. And then, you know, I think from a policy perspective, trying to think about what alternatives might provide a more reliable service that are cost-effective. There's lots of different approaches that states are using nowadays. Some are looking to see how they can combine all the different transportation systems within an area, including public transportation, and then some of the newer types of services like Uber and those services that are more real time to provide these services, and it'll be interesting to see what the use of those how that shows potential to be more reliable and cost effective. And that is it. Thank you.